C7. Number 16B.
All right, we go to Seoul and see what happens in the spiritual evolution. At the point of Seoul, we can see something evolves and gets higher and broader in the measure as we have no limits, limitlessness. That's a great tone here in that chapter, to have a limited, an unlimited idea. So it's limitlessness that is necessary for spiritual evolution, no limits at all, which would mean in the third column that it dissolves the belief in limitation. What happens in the material if we've free ourselves from limitations, and naturally you always have higher and higher species, always higher and higher forms. So there you get the higher forms of evolution. Yes? Then we go to principle. Principle, in order to have spiritual evolution, we need spiritual science. Because only a science can evolve, only a science can reveal. We need that principle of spiritual science. The idea of spiritual science dissolves what in the third column? It dissolves the belief in physical science or in natural science. Natural science. So that what comes out in the human, what do we gain in the human in the second column? We always see that science evolves, that we get the higher and higher sense of the definition of science, let's say a higher scientificality. Always a higher scientificality. Let's take life and the idea that is necessary for eternal evolution is a sense of immortality, of eternality of life, or of spiritual life. And this idea dissolves in the last column. What? The belief in material life. Belief in material life. With all that it has to do with birth and maturity and decay and death. That is overcome. What do we get in the human evolution? A longer life, huh? Longer life. So in the second column, what comes out, what appears as a material evolution, seems to be longevity, longer life. Just as what we experience during the last 100 years, that the average life expectation of people has nearly doubled. Huh? It's longer life. How did it happen? It must have happened because during the last 100 years, people began to see much more the spiritual impact of life and the eternality of life, and therefore it has taken away their sense that life is wholly material. One sees more and more that life is not material, and so this has resulted in a longer life. Or if we take truth, in the first column, we really have a sense of true consciousness. Only a true consciousness is really that which is important in spiritual evolution, that consciousness evolves. And the idea of true consciousness resolves its opposite. It resolves that which has to do with that consciousness is in brain, that belief that all consciousness is in brain. And what has it brought forth in the world? It has brought forth that consciousness expansion, especially if we think back now over the period of the last 100 years with psychology, psychiatry, and so on, and then recently in the last 10 years, that terrific consciousness expansion through all kinds of metaphysics and whatever the means are. This is the outcome of contemplating more and more the nature of consciousness. And in love, we see the highest achievement in evolution is to come to the point where man is one with God, the unity of man with God. That's the tone of love. Man's unity with God, man's integration into God, sense of man's integration into God. Yeah? That has dissolved its opposite belief. Its opposite belief that man is just a part, is just an isolated idea. And what is the outcome of it? That naturally man also actually feels more related to everything. He has a greater sense of being part of the universe, be a universal man. That's what appears as material creation. That heaven has come nearer on earth. Yeah. Now, can you see? If you just look over these columns, and you can see in the first column, you can really see the spiritual evolution in its purity. Where you see, well, what is really spiritual evolution? Spiritual evolution is that mind says, I am the only creativity. I am the creative power. I am the only creative ability. And spirit says, and that creative ability must be only in the spiritual realm. That's the only substantial realm. That's the realm of reality. That realm of reality is in soul unlimited. Don't put any limits on that spiritual evolution. It's never in anything. That's the point she wants to bring out there with that unlimited sense. To see that evolution is not going on in something. It's not going on in a body, in a species, in a civilization, but that it is absolutely outside of every limitation. And then we can see that only a scientific sense of things can evolve it further. That only by restructuring those facts of the ideas that there is a further revelation and a further development possible. And that is in the realm of immortality, eternality, the spiritual revolution. And what does it bring forth? It brings forth only the true consciousness, where one is aware of a evolution. What would be an evolution if we would not be aware of an evolution? Wouldn't mean anything to us. So we can see that evolution must bring us always a greater spiritual awareness in truth, to be aware of what is in being, until finally we feel in that evolution, oh, through that being constantly more and more aware of reality, I feel I'm one with that whole reality, I'm one with God, I'm united with God. Then we can consider the third column as a column and say, what are the beliefs that I have to give up in order that I experience this spiritual evolution? But can you see? What do I have to give up as beliefs so that I can experience the first column? The first column can only be experienced if the opposite belief is given up in the human. So I have to give up at the point of mind the belief that brain and matter is creative, that human reasoning is creative. I give up the belief in spirit that matter alone is substantial and real. I give up, therefore, all sense of limitation in soul. I try to lay down all limitations. Then I give up the belief that evolution is brought about through natural laws, through natural science, through the laws and principle of matter. In life, I give up the belief that this evolution should show itself forth in matter, as life in matter. It isn't life in matter. And in truth, I have to give up the belief that consciousness can expand in the brain, that there is brain consciousness expansion, and that through material means I can expand consciousness. And finally, I see in love that man therefore must no more be considered as an isolated thing that does not take part in the whole evolution, that stands alone and apart, just like some kind of a tribe that lives away from civilization, that does not take part of the universal evolution. If I have a sense of love, I integrate myself into the whole what's going on in the world, and then I go along with civilization and I'm not retarded. So these are the beliefs that have to be given up. Then we can ask ourselves, when I give up these beliefs, how does that show itself forth in the human? And that would be the second column. The second column would be, so to say, the material science following, or the science following, which seem to be material evolution, but actually are now no more material evolution, but the freeing oneself of limitation. How would that come about? And so I begin to see that in the material world there seems to be a creative evolution taking place. Things happen. Always new things are happening. It's a sense of a creation going on. It's a sense of spirit that there is an unfoldment going on, a progress going on. In the long trend, we never experience a backward trend. In the long trend, the trend is always towards higher and higher forms. So I get in spirit, in soul, always higher and higher forms of evolution. Then I begin to see in principle that I can always see better and better through these higher forms, through because I have a better scientific instrumentation to look through the happenings, and I have a higher sense of scientificality. Then this shows itself forth as longer life, as longer life, duration. It shows itself forth in truth that my consciousness expands. I have no more that narrow little view on the universe as perhaps the stone man had. Now I have a much wider view. I have a bigger consciousness, a more universal consciousness, and you come to love where you see actually little by little I can take part in everything that goes on in the universe, and I feel integrated into the whole. Then I call that wrongly a material evolution. Wrongly. And then I understand that first two sentences in the chapter, that it is from a spiritual cause. How did it run? You see? That we rise to the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. So the spiritual cause, that first column, is then actually bringing forth those lower things, the second column. But the condition was the third column. Yes. All right. Did I make myself clear on that point? Or? Yes. Because the terrific sense here. See that we are not falling into that wrong trap where we say, oh, this material evolution, you know, it's material evolution. And we think about and say, this is all error, you know. The only evolution that is actual and real is the spiritual evolution. Well, that's true, that the only evolution that's going on is the spiritual evolution. But we do not say the other evolution is wrong, is a material evolution, and therefore something by itself. This is not true. Or, if it would be true, we would have to accept two principles: the principle of spiritual evolution and the principle of material evolution. Now, this is the great issue today. You know, I think we have slowly come in the development of our age to a point where physics yields its importance to biology. For a long time, say in the last century, medicine was the science, and then slowly in the middle of the last century, physics came in and became more and more the science, and chemistry became then the science. And now, suddenly one begins to feel the future, really, of investigation for a scientist lies in biology, in that big field where the question is, what is the principle of evolution? Is the principle of evolution, like Mono says it, it's a material evolution built on chance, or an absolutely different school in biology which says no, just the opposite is true. The opposite is true. Evolution has nothing to do with material evolution. Life has its own laws. Life has its laws of extropy or non-entropy, negative entropy, and biology lives by the law of this negative entropy. Therefore, according to a law which is absolutely antagonistic to the laws of entropy or of laws of matter. This is the great issue today, and if one reads the scientific papers today, they fight with each other very hard on those two issues. This is the chapter on the science of being. They ask, what is life? What is being? What is the principle of being? And they haven't solved the question yet, but actually we could see, we should be able to see the solution. The solution lies in a completely different approach than what they do. They approach it from the dualistic point of view. And they say there is a material evolution, there is a spiritual evolution. And Mrs. Eddy approaches it from the oneness and says there is one evolution. But that one evolution can be looked at as a coin that has two faces, whereby both faces are interlocked. They are intertwined, therefore they are united. They are just different levels from which to look at evolution. Yes? Yeah. That's that. Start with some objections answered. Some objections answered. Yes. This chapter is a little bit the stepchild of the Christian Scientists. Very seldom I hear that somebody is speaking about this chapter, because a Christian Scientist says, I have no objections against Christian Science, so this chapter is only for those who have objections to Christian Science. And so they are not interested in it. And fundamentally, when Mrs. Eddy began to write this chapter, actually it was considered to be a chapter called, Answers to a Clergyman. It was answering some objection that was brought forth by the outsider of Christian Science. Then she elaborated it through the various editions, and finally when we look at this chapter, we suddenly feel this is a very deep scientific treatise on quite modern ideas of science. It is treating the big question of Gestalt theory, namely that a part does not make sense without being integrated into the whole, and that we cannot give any judgment on a part, we cannot have a true explanation of a part until we integrate the part into the whole. This is an attitude that is absolutely modern to most people on this world, because we all have been educated at a time when this attitude was unknown. We have all been educated at a time when it was felt that if we would understand each part of a whole, that we would know the whole. That if we would analyze each part and see how each part reacts and what laws are operating in a part, what is the nature of a part, that if each part is properly analyzed, then all parts put together would be the whole. This is a wrong attitude which must be corrected. And we must see today that parts are only understood from the whole. Not that the whole can be understood from the parts. That knowing the parts does not know, or let's put it like this, knowing all the parts does not say that we know the whole. That's the point. That in order to know the parts, you must know the whole. And only from the point of view of the whole, you can know the parts rightly. Well, this is a completely new attitude of science. I don't know how far that attitude has gone into the teaching today in schools and university. I don't know, because universities and schools are usually very backward. They are not really progressive. It's usually just one or the other professor, and usually a dissenter, that goes forward. But the educational system is very rigid in most countries, and they like to go along the way they always have gone along. And this is understandable, that teachers who have been teaching already for 40 years and are now perhaps 50 or 55 years old, they don't like to change their whole system of teaching. And they feel for the rest of their other 5 or 10 years, they could go along just as they have done up to now. So actually it's always the outsider that begins to see that a new approach, a new teaching is necessary, a new view is necessary. And so here in that chapter on some objection answered, Mrs. Eddy really shows that she has anticipated the concept of science 100 years before that concept of science came into view.